Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborist Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. We've been having lots of fun today. We were really excited. We've had a very interesting show. And to help us finish things out, we've got Buck Gino back of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's great to be with you ladies. We enjoy participating on the program.
And you've got a guest.
I do. I have Tom Good. Tom has been a guest many times before. Tom is the resident officer of the Grand Rapids, Michigan office of the National Labor Relations Board. Tom, welcome to the Union Edge, and thanks for coming on.
Hello, Buck, and Brittany and Angela, and hello to the Union Edge listening audience. It's always a privilege.
I was going to have to put you on hold if the basketball game didn't end as quickly as it did. So, but the Spartans will get their chance tonight, right?
That's right, tonight.
I'm assuming you know Michigan won, right?
You know, I don't know. I've been hard at work. I haven't looked away from my work. My two screens on my desk are both taken up with NLRB work today.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well,
hard
you know,
at,
Tom,
work,
I thank you for sending this stuff over because this is something I hadn't really thought about much. And since it's tax season, people are always getting W-2s and 1099s. And maybe we should start off telling what is the difference between a W-2 and a 1099? If someone got a 1099 in the mail, what would that tell them?
Well, it tells them that the people that they've been working for do not consider them to be employees, but probably consider them to be independent contractors. 1099. First of all, I don't work for the IRS. I'm not an expert here, so
sure.
You have to take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But
mm-hmm.
An employer or a company will send out a 1099 and a copy to the IRS when they believe that they've paid somebody for a service as an independent contractor. And something that we have found over the years of enforcing the National Labor Relations Act is that many times employees or people are improperly categorized or classified as independent contractors rather than employees. And the reason why that's important is that the National Labor Relations Act defines certain important rights for employees, but the definition of employee excludes people who are independent contractors. So if somebody truly is an independent contractor, they do not have the rights to engage in self-organization, to join a union or to refrain from union membership, and they don't have the right to vote in an NLRB election. So it matters. And we find that a lot of people have been misclassified over the years, and this is kind of a hot topic now because our economy is changing, and the so-called gig economy, where people are working at they don't work 30 or 35 years for a single employer,
mm-hmm.
they're bouncing around from one employer to another. They may still be employees and maybe should be considered employees, but sometimes their employer doesn't see it that way.
So I guess to clarify, say if you were an employer maybe and you had, say you had 50 people that were working for you, and then it became a discussion whether it was there was a union organizing drive inside the company. If there were, say, 15 or 20 of those employees that were considered independent contractors, then they would not have the right to vote during that election, correct?
That's right. If they were properly considered and classified as independent contractors, those people would not get to vote, would not be represented by a union.
I guess the clear thing is, why is that? Is it because they're considered contractors? Is that the word?
That's right. That's right. When the National Labor Relations Act was being legislated and heading for passage by the Congress in 1935 and was signed into law by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, there were certain compromises that were made and certain decisions that were made as to whom it should cover. And they excluded from the definition of employee, only employees have the rights under the Act, but they excluded from the definition of employees certain groups. Independent contractors are one, people employed by a parent or a spouse are excluded from the definition of employee. Agricultural employees, people who work in the fields on a farm, for example, are also excluded. And there were various somewhat interesting reasons why those other groups were excluded. For purposes of our discussion today, the people who are independent contractors who really work for themselves and not for an employer as an employee were excluded from the Act's provisions and the Act's protections.
You know, say a person went to work for an employer, and would that be a surprise to them if they, you know, like people go to work and they get a paycheck? Do they pay? Is it the same kind of situation? Is their federal income tax taken out, state income tax taken out, or do they make sure that the employee has to pay those?
Well, somebody who is who gets a 1099, and once again, this is just my understanding. I'm not an expert giving tax advice here, but if you get a 1099, my understanding and my experience has been that the employee has to pay both her share as she has to pay both halves of the Social Security tax. An employer pays when you have an employer and you get a W-2. The employer is paying a portion, and you're paying a portion of the Social Security and other taxes. When you're an independent contractor, you have to pay both portions, and it's a hefty bite. So part of the problem with people being wrongly classified as independent contractors is that the tax withholding burden shifts to them entirely from the employer. Now, sometimes that's the right thing to do. Sometimes some people really are independent contractors.
Right.
But there are some folks who really are and ought to be considered employees and have all of the rights that go with employment, including the right to have your employer pay their share of those federal taxes.
How does one such as the NLRB sort that out? How do they sort out whether someone should be a independent contractor or a what we would call as a term as a regular employee? How would they sort that out?
I wish there were a simple, bright line test for that. Unfortunately, there's not. And let me just preface what I'm about to say for your listeners, that if anybody wonders, I'm getting a 1099, and maybe I really ought to be an employee and not considered an independent contractor, they might give us a call, and I'll be glad to give contact information at the end of our interview here. But there are about 10 different criteria that the board and the courts look at when deciding whether somebody is truly an employee or an independent contractor. And the factors sometimes don't all stack up in one direction or the other. We have to sort of balance after looking at all of the factors, all of the circumstances. But let me just give your listeners an idea of some of the things that we look at. We look at the extent of control which the employer, we might call the master in this relationship, exercises over the details of the work performed by the servant. And those are terms of art. We don't mean to imply socioeconomic differences between the employer and the independent contractor here, but those are terms that the lawyers have developed over the years. The master being the person who's paying for the service. The servant is the person who's providing the service. We look at whether or not the one employed is engaged in a distinct occupation or a business. Are they bringing a particular skill? For example, somebody were employed, let's say somebody who was a computer specialist, a data a data scientist who was brought in for a particular project because he or she had a particular skill that was not directly related to the business of the employer, but they needed this particular expertise for a particular period of time. That person might be considered an independent contractor. Rather than somebody who's helping the company with their core business function. We look at the skills that the person brings to the work, occupation.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a little break here.
We're
speaking to Tom Good of the National Labor Relations Board office in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're discussing who is and who isn't an independent contractor and how it affects your taxes and how it affects you. That being said, we're going to take a little break. I'm Buck Gino, and you're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio.
We are the BCTGM, the union representing bakery workers. We have been joining forces with our members and thousands of community partners across America to end corporate exploitation of workers across the globe. Our campaign has its roots with the Mondelez Nabisco's firing of 600 workers at its Chicago bakery and replacing them with workers earning poverty wages in Mexico. College and university student activists have reached out to our global campaign, and the BCTGM is proud to welcome the more than 20 million students across America as partners in defeating this greed-based business model. Student voices have changed the world, and these future community and national leaders will add energy and heightened spirit to the BCTGM's consumer boycott of Mexican-made Nabisco products. Join the fight. Help change the world. Invite the Nabisco 600 team to your campus by visiting fightforamericanjobs.org. Follow us on Facebook at Nabisco 600 BCTGM Local 300.
It was 1973. Helen Reddy's song, I Am Woman, was at the top of the charts. The feminist movement was in full swing. A group of Boston women office workers started talking about how they were treated at work, how men made more money for the same jobs, how they couldn't take time off to care for their kids without putting their jobs at risk. They were feisty, empowered, and fed up. They founded 9to5, a membership organization of women working in low-wage jobs, inspiring a national hit song and movie. Whether it's fighting for better leave policies, for equal pay for equal work, to ban the box, or strengthen the safety net, 9to5 is on the front lines of putting our issues on the public agenda, and they're winning big. Find out more about how they're raising the bar at www.9to5.org. That's the number 9to5.org.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated.
The library!
On Jones' house.
The bus stop.
And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12, reminding you that sheet metal is vital to technology and manufacturing in nearly every industry known to man. Sheet metal workers gain knowledge and skills in all aspects of sheet metal manufacture and fabrication, leading to a variety of career opportunities. The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12 is now accepting applications for apprentices. Requirements include a high school diploma or GED and a Pennsylvania driver's license. More information can be obtained online at smlocal12.org. That's smlocal12.org.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. We've been having lots of fun today. And to wrap things up here, we've got Buck Gino back of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, ladies. Hopefully you enjoy your rest.
Yes, I'm very much looking
planning
forward
on it.
To it.
Today with us, we have Tom Good, who's the resident officer of the National Labor Relations Board in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Tom, thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure and a privilege, Buck.
You know, we've been talking about the definition of an employee and or people that are independent contractors and what effects that have to them and in their basic rights under the National Labor Relations Act. Tom, you were talking about about all the issues that come to mind when you try to decide whether someone is an independent contractor or employee. And, you know, one of the things that I had seen over the years is that, you know, it seems that employers are pushing their employees toward that independent contractor status for a couple of different reasons. They lose a little bit of liability, but also there is no danger, and they know that, of them being able to participate in an organizing movement within their company. Have you seen anything like that in your day?
Yes, in my many years of working with the NLRB, we've sometimes seen people who really are employees, who have an employment relationship with the employer, and they have a fellow employee relationship with their coworkers, have been misclassified as independent contractors, and whether the purpose or just the effect is to remove them from the protections of the National Labor Relations Act, is something that we can speculate about. But mm-hmm. People really ought not to be misclassified. If they're truly employees, they should have and know that they can exercise their rights under the National Labor Relations Act.
So one would find that out basically from the front end, right, you would think? I mean, when they take a job with an employer?
Well, yes. If you don't know on the day that you're hired, when January or February of the following year rolls around and you get a 1099 rather than a W-2 in the mail, that's a pretty good hint that the employer considers you to be an independent contractor. This comes up in certain types of cases. Back when I was a young field examiner working in Hartford, Connecticut, we had a case with a taxi cab company, and taxi cab companies are this issue frequently comes up. Sometimes we found cab drivers to be employees. Sometimes we found that they have enough control over their working environment, their hours, even the fares that they charge, that they really are independent contractors. Another group of people that it applies to are truck drivers, independent truck drivers who oftentimes are contractors, but many times they have a 9-to-5 job or a weekly job. They have the same route week in and week out. They're using the employer's equipment. They're treated just like employees, except when it comes time for them to pay their taxes or when the time comes that they want to join or form a union. But there are other jobs. We're finding increasingly with this the gig economy we have developing here, where people are bouncing around and taking their skills from one employer to another, where this issue comes up too.
You know, Tom, one of the things, the questions I would have, say if an employee was basically really surprised by that, you know, like you said, in January, February, when they get their tax information, that they get a 1099, what should they do? I mean, obviously, they would feel probably not willing to already discuss it with their employer so much for fear of not being employed at all. So what should an employee do?
Well, if they want to exercise their rights under the National Labor Relations Act, and then they should call one of their NLRB offices and talk with someone like me. We could help them talk through the various criteria that we look at. I went through an earlier list with you, but just a couple of others I want to add. We look at, for example, whether people are paid by the job or by a unit of time, such as an hourly wage or a monthly salary. If they're paid by the job, that might indicate that they're an independent contractor. If they are paid hourly or weekly or by some unit of time, that's an indication that they might be more properly considered an employee. Mm-hmm. We look at whether the work is part of the regular business of the employer or whether it's some special project. The length of time, whether people are employed for a brief period of time or intermittent employment, or whether it's a long-term regular commitment. Those are some of the other criteria that we look at. If what prompts your question, gee, am I an independent contractor or an employee, is your W-2 or your 1099 form, you might want to call the IRS because they have a slightly different test. They're overlapping, but their test is slightly different from ours. Depending on what leads you to ask that question of yourself would lead you maybe to a different government agency.
That being said, Tom, let's go over how we connect with the National Labor Relations Board and how do we get that help.
Well, we have offices all over the country. There are about 50 offices. Some of them are regional, some of them are sub-regional, some of them are resident offices like ours. They're just different sizes of offices. You can go to our website and find the office near you. You can call, and somebody like me will be glad to talk with you and answer your questions. If you go to our website, it's www.nlrb.gov. That's NLRB as in National Labor Relations Board. There's a map on there, and it'll show you the closest office and the local office phone numbers. We have a nationwide toll-free number you can always call. That's 866-667-NLRB. That's 866-667-6572.
And the National Labor Relations Board, with the folks like you, the agents and the employees, are completely willing to come out and speak to any group of workers or any group of people to discuss workers' rights and under the law, and answer any questions in a group forum too. Correct?
That's correct. These are important rights, and they should not be a secret. We're happy to make speakers available to groups large and small who have an interest in the history and the important work of the National Labor Relations Board.
Tom, it has been great having you. We really appreciate you coming on today. And for those who are listening, and if you get a surprise in your in an envelope, whether you're getting a 1099 or a W-2, and you're unsure, make sure that you either call the National Labor Relations Board or get someone to help you, because it can make a difference for you down the end. That being said, for Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, and Laura Weens, I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor Stock Radio.